Chapter 1. Enchanted lights floated in the air above us and looked like stars against the dark blue ceiling of the Lunar Palace dining hall. The smell of cinnamon and roasted ham filled the air, while the sounds of laughter and liquid being poured into mugs resonated around me. The celebration had begun. After months of playing cat and mouse with the elusive sage, we'd finally captured and killed Olivier. I'd given the honor of his execution to my dragon mate, Valera, and she practically glowed with accomplishment. She'd finally been able to fulfill her promise to avenge the deaths of her family, and I'd handed the bastard to her on a silver platter. Watching his long overdue death quickly became a moment I knew I'd never forget, and it was all I could do to not rip Valera's blood-soaked dress to the ground in front of everyone. The Lady Dragon had towered over Olivier's limp body like a goddess, and everyone had been in awe, including me. The only problem now was the breach was still open. Our attempt to finally close it had been shut down hard by a faceless shadowy figure whose ominous voice still echoed in my head.
"I shall not be overcome."
It was a spine-tingling warning. And something powerful enough to stop me with Aliona's power bound into mine was definitely not something to be trifled with. After today's celebrations, we would embark on a new journey, one that would add even more power to mine, and it had to be enough to take down this ruler of the underworld.
"Evan?"
A soft voice whispered in my ear and snapped me back to the present.
Sorry,
I murmured to my wife Aliona. She tucked a raven-colored forelock into the rest of her stark white hair and bit her pink lower lip. Even though she was the most powerful priestess in Rama, she was prone to worrying about everything. Her amethyst eyes peered into mine with obvious concern, and I laced my fingers through hers on her lap.
"Are you not happy with our progress?"
she asked under her breath. "No, it's not that at all," I replied. I was replaying Olivier's death in my head, which was obviously a wonderful memory, but this is going to be an even bigger task ahead of us now. We have no idea what we're up against. I only saw a shadow and orange eyes.
"It's rather daunting,"
Aliona admitted with a frown.
"There has to be some way to learn more about the beast you saw."
"I wish I could just Google shadow beast with orange eyes," I muttered. "I bet I could find something there."
"Google?"
My wife arched a single eyebrow in curiosity.
"Is that a new spell?"
"Nah, just something from Earth I could really use here." I chuckled before something caught my attention. "Well, would you look at that?" Aliona and I both turned to see Valera and my Aunt Emma with their heads pressed together as they whispered and giggled together. It was an unlikely pairing, though not because my aunt had anything against dragons. Valera just normally kept her tough walls up, even with me. It was rare to see her smile and chat with anyone, but the two seemed to be getting along perfectly. I was incredibly curious as to what they could possibly have in common, so I tuned my dragon hearing into their conversation.
"I wonder if the little one will look like Evan,"
Emma murmured.
"He was such a handsome child, even as an infant. And those eyes... Oh, I have indeed prayed our child would have his eyes,"
Valera agreed.
"They were the first thing about him that caught my attention. Well, once I stopped trying to fight him for coming into my territory, he was always wandering where he didn't belong,"
my aunt giggled. "Well, damn, she wasn't even upset Valera had tried to eat me when I first got here?" They continued to discuss what characteristics our child would have, while my mind drifted to our little egg. Even though Olivier was dead, it still hadn't hatched. Some research we'd found a while back had theorized that dragon eggs won't hatch until the child feels safe, and I worried my son or daughter would never feel safe unless we closed the breach. "I hate to interrupt our lovely dinner, but we do need to figure out a plan for how to get that damn breach shut," I announced. The table fell silent as everyone turned to look at me. My adoptive parents, Ruslan and Julia, sat on the other side of Aliona with matching looks of surprise. They were two of the three elders of Hatra, and they'd adopted me as the heir to the city a few months ago. Ruslan was a fox demihuman who was somewhere around 800 years old, and his partner Julia was a human whose age was also in the hundreds. I'd been amazed when they first told me how they could cultivate their spiritual energy to maintain their ability to live so long. And it was even crazier to realize Ruslan had taught me how to cultivate and access my own spiritual sea, which meant I would live longer too. As a dragon, my lifespan was already at least several centuries, so I had no idea how long I'd live since I could cultivate as well. Next to my parents, Lord Nikolaus, who I called Nike for short, stared at me with his silvery eyes, and his jet-black hair was draped across his brow. He was my best friend, and he'd been a solid ally in the dozens of battles we'd fought since I arrived in Anadi.
"Do we know why the spell didn't work?"
Naomi asked after the long silence. She was a lizard demihuman and a powerful mage in her own right. Her magenta hair was cut blunt at her jaw, and she tucked it behind her ear to reveal the dark pink scales that traveled down her neck and disappeared under her black robes, though I knew from experience they continued to wrap around her curvy body. "We suspect whoever spoke in my head is the one who stopped it," I answered with a frown. "But we can't be sure who or what that was."
"Maybe it was another demon,"
Polina suggested. Polina was one of the three dryad sisters in my harem. The jade-skin trio consisted of Polina, Trina, and Marina, and they sat together as we ate our celebratory dinner.
"Or someone pretending to be a demon,"
Marina pointed out.
"Yeah, he had to have some powerful magic to talk inside Lord Evan's head like that,"
Trina nodded vigorously.
"Anyone who could do that to the most powerful magical dragon in Rama has to be strong."
The dryads shivered in unison, and Ravi grabbed Polina's hand to comfort her. The phoenix wore her flaming orange hair twisted back into a braid that fell over her shoulder, though the ends still smoked with the scent of a campfire. She looked at me with her blue eyes and waited for the solution I needed to find soon. "He had the element of surprise," I reminded them. "Now we know he's there, even if we don't know who he is. We just have to find a way to stop him."
"It's difficult to fight a battle against a mysterious opponent,"
Laika chimed in.
"We must find out who we're facing."
As the leader of the Blue Tree Guild, Laika was a hardened soldier. She was a wolf demihuman, and her furry gray ears flicked on her head as she spoke. She was clearly agitated with the situation, and not only because we hadn't closed the breach. She and my wife shared a close bond, and Laika was often Aliona's protector. She hated the idea of Aliona being in danger, and this situation was dangerous for everyone.
"Whoever it is, he can't possibly be more powerful than Evan combined with the power of the noble spirits,"
Mariah interjected with a clenched fist.
"We are more powerful than any underworld creature."
Mariah's blue eyes were bright with determination, and her silvery white hair fell down her back and grazed the cheeks of her perfect butt. She was the spirit of the Sword of Hatra, the blade I carried into battle, and one of 12 noble swords that had been separated by the gods centuries ago. I'd promised her we would find her sister spirits, and now it seemed they might be our only hope for finally closing the breach.
"Have you decided to use the Redeem Evincio ceremony to bind their power with yours as well?" Ruslan asked, with a twinge of excitement in his voice. "That is a great amount of power to hold."
"That's what they said about the Celestial Triad," I shrugged, and met my father's gaze. "I handled that, and I can handle this. Besides, it's what's best for Rama. I have to do it."
"I won't try to talk you out of it,"
he chuckled as he held up his hands in a mock surrender.
"I know better. I just want you to understand what you're taking on. It's no small feat."
"If there's anything I've learned in the past few weeks with this family, it's that we can accomplish just about anything together,"
Rebecca said. The bare demi-human woman towered over the rest of my lovers, even as we sat around the table. Her auburn hair was pulled back into a low ponytail, and she looked over at Aaliyah, the lioness, who sat next to her with a proud smile of encouragement. Both women were fierce warriors, and there were few people in this world who would dare to argue with them.
"Then together, we will defeat the shadowy voice,"
Aliona declared. Cups clinked together as my family celebrated the princess's bold statement, and my heart thudded against my ribcage as I joined them. I had one hell of a support system for what was about to become the biggest adventure of my life. "I know we can do this," I murmured to Aliona, once everyone had focused on dessert. "I'm more concerned with how we're going to."
We just have to find the noble spirits,
my wife replied.
It can't be that hard.
It was meant to be difficult,
Mariah chimed in.
But I believe Lord Evan has an easier path for us to take.
I do, I confirmed, and Aliona looked at me with surprise. It was a memory I found in the Videnia. One of my ancestors, Lord Adrian. He and his wife cast some kind of spell with the Sword of Hatra.
What happened?
Aliona asked. Her violet eyes twinkled.
Did it give you their locations?
Sort of, I hedged. I didn't get a chance to tell you about it since it was before the wedding and everything else happened.
Never mind that.
My wife waved her hand dismissively and looked at Mariah.
Do you think we could see the memory for ourselves? Then we could create a map.
That's brilliant, Your Highness,
the spirit said.
I don't know which spell would work for that, but I imagine something in the archives would help.
Then we must go to the archives,
Aliona decided.
Why are we going to the archives?
Julia wondered with a fond smile. My mother was almost as much of a bookworm as my wife, and they shared a love for the archives that were hidden below the city and contained thousands upon thousands of texts from all over the world. We'd combed through them several times when we looked for information, but there were still tons of books we hadn't even touched yet.
We need to find a spell that can show us all Lord Evan's memory,
Aliona explained.
If we can all see it, we should be able to help pinpoint the locations of the noble swords.
And then he can find and bond with their spirits,
Julia finished and clasped her hands together.
Brilliant!
Let's go then,
Naomi squealed. The lizard mage had been in utter amazement when she first saw the archives, which were a far cry from the tiny library she'd kept in her brother's castle in Kana. While she'd collected many texts that had helped her learn how to wield her magic, her little collection looked like child's play in comparison. It only took a few minutes for everyone to finish their plates, and then we were headed out of the Lunar Palace and down into the archives. Aliona, Julia, and Naomi led the rest of us into the tunnel, and we wound around the columns to the section they wanted to search. Emma and Rebecca had never been to the archives before, and they looked around us in awe. I remembered the first time I stumbled upon this place, and I couldn't believe something like this could truly exist. Now it was a central part of Hatra, and sometimes our people held town hall meetings inside the large lobby of the underground facility. We each pulled books from the shelves, but it soon became clear that the spell we wanted to use was not a simple one to find. My mind started to wander in the direction of the bestiary texts when the lizard demi-human broke the silence.
Too bad Olivier's books were destroyed in the flood,
Naomi commented.
We could have added them to the archives, and one of them might have been able to help us with this problem. How do you know they were destroyed?
Julia wondered.
It's entirely possible he had them under a protection spell. Surely he believed he would defeat you and be able to take his things with him.
Yeah, he always thought he would beat us, I murmured. I bet you're right.
We cleared out all the water,
Trina pointed out.
It should be pretty easy to check.
I think we could go do that, Nike offered and glanced at me.
I could see my fellow noble had already grown tired of looking at the books in the archives. He was more of a hands-on guy than the spellcasting type. Yeah, we can portal over, I agreed before I turned to Aliona. Do you have the coins with you? The coins were a magical tool we'd found with a green glass sect mage, and they'd been very useful in our fight against the sage and sect members, so Aliona's father, King Rodion, had recreated our own version with the image of a dragon on one side. They looked a lot better than the green leaf, but I could be a little biased.
I do,
she confirmed, and plucked one of the coins from her spatial storage.
I can open the portal for you here, but this will get you back if it shuts.
Perfect. I grinned and pocketed the coin. Let's go.
Son, are you sure you should return to Bruven's Peaks? Ruslan interjected with a frown. You know the gods forbade mortals to go there. I'm still surprised Olivier was brazen enough to use it for his hideout.
We've done nothing but help the gods, I insisted. I doubt they'll be upset if we go in there for some old books that no one is ever going to use again.
I don't like it, my father argued. You've barely had contact with the gods. Do you even know how to appease them?
Keep kicking evil guys' asses? I shrugged and smirked. I think I've done all right so far.
I'd better go with you, Ruslan replied with a roll of his eyes. Your diplomatic skills with mortals are still a work in progress, let alone the gods of Inati.
Dragon diplomacy. My inner dragon snorted, and I had to agree this diplomacy stuff was getting to be a pain in the ass. "If you want to," I said. "If nothing else, you can tell us which books are actually worth bringing back." The fox demihuman nodded his agreement, and the three of us lined up as Aliona murmured the words to her portal spell. Within seconds, the crackling sounds of her pure white magic filled the air, and we could see a window to the cave where the self-proclaimed sage had hidden out for months.
"Be careful, my love,"
Aliona whispered as she squeezed my hand.
"Your father is right about the gods. They can be ruthless if their wishes are not met."
"I'll be fine," I assured her. "See you soon." I led Nike and Ruslan through the portal into the dark cave. Although I could see in even the darkest of nights, I knew my father and best friend would have a hard time in the black space. So I called to my fire magic and flicked sparks up to the lanterns I knew hung from the ceiling to illuminate the space. They both blinked in surprise, and Ruslan covered his open mouth as he looked around him.
"Is this?" he whispered. "He kept living creatures in those?"
My father pointed to the rows of magical cages that lined the walls of the enormous cavern. Until a few days ago, they had been filled with a number of creatures from around the world. A centaur, a Timson, and even a cat had been under Olivier's gesh, cursed to do his evil bidding without question. Olivier even went so far as to create an animal with parts of other creatures. The beast had been feral, and I'd killed it out of mercy. Once we defeated the sage, we'd pulled the curse out of the surviving creature's souls so they could return to their normal lives. Now, with the empty cages, the cave felt even larger than before, and somehow more ominous. And the gnarled bones of the corrupted shark beast I'd killed didn't help that feeling.
"Yeah, he had them all in those cages," I grunted. "It was sick. And that thing he made? Seriously disturbing stuff."
"Maybe we should find where he made it," Nike suggested. "Perhaps there are texts about life creation we should destroy."
"Good idea," I agreed. "You look for that. I'll take Ruslan to the library." We split up, and Nike searched the cavern for another hallway, while I led Ruslan toward the opening that led to Olivier's collection. I could just make out a shimmery wall in front of the doorway, and I knew Julia was right. Olivier had some kind of protection spell that guarded his library from the water that poured into the cavern when he summoned the shark beast. It barely had skin over its bones when I'd fought it, and it seemed even its rotting skin had drifted away with the rest of the water. We passed the pile of bones, and Ruslan ran his fingers along one of the huge ribs with a grimace.
"Ugh, a lingba," he murmured. "I assume you're the one who slayed this beast."
"Yeah, that was a rough fight," I replied. "It can make the water completely black. I could barely see anything."
"Water cloaking," Ruslan nodded as he continued past the beast. "The lingba is rare, and very few have actually been defeated. It is odd to see one in such a place."
"Well, it was corrupted," I said. "I'm sure Olivier was doing more of his experiments on it."
"Horrid," the fox demihuman replied with a disgusted look on his face. "His death was entirely too quick for his crimes."
"On that we can definitely agree," I muttered, before I pushed through the thin magical veil and stepped into the cavernous opening of Olivier's library. It was just as expansive as I remembered, and it looked completely untouched from the battle we'd waged in the cave. I picked up a book from the shelf and flipped through the pages. Not a single one was wrinkled from water or showed any other signs the flood had entered the library.
"These are in pristine condition," Ruslan breathed, as he looked through another text. "Even without the battle you fought outside here, this is thousands of years old, and still in near-perfect shape. It's unbelievable."
"Olivier seemed to find the best of the best," I murmured, and my gaze drifted down the row of books that seemed to go on for a mile. "Are they all worth taking?"
"Let me see," my father answered.
He strolled down the row and eyed a few books from each section. He muttered and gasped and clucked his tongue, and I turned my attention back to the texts when one in particular caught my eye. Draconic Times. I pulled the book from the shelf and opened its yellowing pages to see a hand-painted dragon sprawled across the inner cover and first page. It was a gorgeous creation with red and gold scales, and each scale was painted in great detail down to a shimmer that seemed to bring the painting to life. Even the bright green eyes appeared to stare into mine as I looked at the design. It was incredible. Then I slowly turned the page to find handwritten depictions of dragons. It was as though someone had spent years observing multiple dragon families, and the writer described every little detail about their lives. It began with dragon mates, their courtship and subsequent bonding ceremony, and their hatchlings. Then it continued to talk about the hatchlings and how they were raised among other dragon families. We used to have whole dragon communities, I sighed to myself. It was unbelievable. Some of the younger dragons were sent to live among the Dracha, where they were trained to wield their magic and protect dragon villages all over Anadi. Thousands of dragons used to build their nests and towns among the mountains everywhere, and Olivier had used his blood magic to destroy nearly an entire race. There had to be a reason he targeted dragons, but I had no idea what it could be. However, I'd at least figured out an important piece of information. I confirmed what Iskander told me a few days ago when he'd brought up the fact that dragons couldn't be born of humans. But as far as I'd known in my life back on Earth, such things didn't exist. Now I was living, breathing proof dragons were real, at least here on Anadi. So, how was I created? I was fairly certain my mother had been human, and I figured my aunt would have mentioned something by now if that wasn't true. As for my biological father, I had no idea. My mother never talked about him, and questions about him were met with uneasy or half-hearted answers. As a kid, I thought he was a shit dad who walked out on us. As I got older, though, I wondered if he'd died or she really just didn't know much about him, which would explain why she didn't like to talk about some illicit short-term affair with a stranger. I wouldn't have judged her for a one-night stand, but it would have been nice to know my dad, whoever he was. I snapped the book shut and tucked it into my spatial storage. I wanted to go through it more, but it might help to read it with Valera and Aliona, who knew much more about dragons and the magical world than I did.
All of them,
Ruslan declared suddenly, and interrupted my thoughts.
All what?
I blinked a few times as I turned to see my father with a wide grin. The books?
Yes, he cried out with excitement. We need to take all of them back to the archives. Some texts here date back to the days of mere humans walking the land.
According to the merpeople I'd met back in Pullis, that was a while back. So it seemed Olivier had amassed quite the collection. Spatial storage? I offered.
Indeed, Ruslan agreed, and skipped back to the other end. I'll start down here.
Guess I'll start on this side, I chuckled as I walked back toward the entry. Then I opened my spatial storage and felt a bit like Mary Poppins as I began to dump row after row of books into the magical space.
I suppose your father decided to take all the books. Nike's voice was amused as he strolled into the library with a grin.
Yep, I sighed. Any luck on the evil laboratory?
Indeed, the noble confirmed as he held up a small journal.
There weren't any finished books in there, but I did find Olivier's notes about his experiments. The beast we faced was not his first creation.
Gods, I muttered. What happened to the others?
The first few died within minutes of their, birth,
he explained with a grimace.
There were two more right after the first generation, and they lived for almost a month. He seemed to improve with each round, and by the time he created the beast we saw, it was one of six.
But we only saw the one, I frowned, and rubbed my face with frustration. So where are the other five?
He found two dead out on the mountain, Nike answered. The other three were released into the wild.
Of course they were, I groaned. Are we going to have to hunt these things down?
I don't know, my lord, he replied as he furrowed his brow. They may die as their siblings did, but I can't say for certain.
Well, let's just hang on to that journal, I decided. We'll discuss it with His Eminence. Maybe he can send a group of soldiers to the release locations and handle it.
Good idea.
Nike dipped his head and handed the book to me. I tucked the journal into my storage with the others, and I summoned a messenger dragon in my palm. It was strange to look at the tiny creature now and know the larger version lived in my spiritual sea as my inner dragon. He was the epitome of all my dragon instincts, but for now, he was the physical access to my magic that I could send anywhere I wanted to pass along a message. "Go to King Rodion," I commanded the little beast. "Tell him there are at least three of the deformed creatures possibly roaming these mountains, or possibly the forest closer to the ground. He needs to send his soldiers to hunt the beasts and dispose of them." The tiny dragon lowered its body into a bow, and then it took off out of the cave toward the White Jade Temple, where my father-in-law likely sat on his balcony and held tightly to his hold on the seal that kept the demons at bay. He had a lot on his plate, but I knew his soldiers could handle the abominable creatures, and we could both continue working on closing the breach. I focused once again on the bookshelves, but as soon as my fingers grazed the spine of one book, a shiver trickled down my arm to my toes, so I gripped the text and pulled it from the shelf. The title simply read, "Covetous." I opened the cover and skimmed through what looked to be almost like a children's fairy tale, but certainly in the style of the Brothers Grimm. It featured a man who went around his village and made terrible deals with the citizens that were obviously in his favor, though they didn't realize it yet. He would either make a fake treasure, or he would steal from one person and trade the stolen or fraudulent item with another person for the things he truly desired, such as gold, jewels, and clothing. Soon he'd gathered a fortune and quickly departed his home village before his fellow citizens caught on to his schemes. He moved from city to city, always moving on before anyone could figure out what he was doing. Suddenly, he was met on his path by an old crone who warned his dastardly deeds would soon be his undoing. But he dismissed her without a second thought. He had everything he could possibly want, and he still wanted more. I turned to the second-to-last page, and I nearly dropped the book as a drawing lashed out. In the fable, the gods appeared in front of the greedy man and demanded he return all his wrongly obtained goods to their rightful owners, or he would suffer the consequences. The man refused, and the gods gathered together for a moment before one of them hit the man with a bolt of lightning and killed him instantly. His soul was dragged into the underworld, which was a gruesome depiction of tortured beings who begged for reprieve, and his body was left on the road to rot and be eaten by the creatures of the nearby forest. It was a grisly tale, but the point was clear. The gods didn't want people to lie and steal to get what they wanted from other people. Or maybe it was just the fact that the man wanted what everyone else had. Either way, he sounded like a prick who got exactly what he deserved. I just couldn't figure out why the book sent chills down my spine. I glanced up to see Ruslan was about halfway down the aisle, and I decided to show him the book and see what he thought. As I closed the book, I turned toward my father, but then the hairs on the back of my neck stood on end. We were no longer the only ones in the library.